interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 675. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed and bring those miscreants with you. There is a way to do that. Donation season continues and probably will. I was just told here this last week, right after the broadcast, we lost another hard drive. And I think these are the hard drives that have been around for the longest. And so Sound is trying to keep up with that. He needs your donations to keep the equipment coming. The prices are going up. He's doing his best to find the deals. He said he did find two more deals. So, like I said, he's on this. It's just a matter of getting enough interest to pay the bills. And so I'm asking you again, find the donation buttons at reallibertymedia.com or rlmradio.xyz or wherever you find them, even in the video presentations that Sound puts together and for people in the link tree, wherever you can find them, hunt them down, give what you can, give a coffee, if you will. KOFI is a website there. You can find that as well if you're more interested to do that and help keep the network rolling along. I understand we're moving into version 2.0. They're about done with the 1.0, got everything cleaned up, did a swap. They actually had to do a system drop. Half the system got taken down, but you never lost the feed. So that was another test that was going on, but they needed to drop the main system in order to get the hard drive fixed or drives fixed. And yet we had a continuous feed. So it is coming along, and there is going to be more glitches, but I think they're going to be more and more minimal, and things will be cleaned up a bit. And again, you can donate content. Get a hold of Sound Minds as you can. Maybe in the chats, you can direct you where to contact him. Work out a slot to have be scheduled. I understand we had a program change. Someone moved from one day to another. So even that's happening as we were trying to bring this thing back. You're putting a tan on the white elephant, Grimner's white elephant. And we're going to go past that, I think. We're going to be trying to get a white elephant to lay a golden goose, hopefully, for all y'all. And providing a ton of content to everybody. And again, right now, without a ton of live content providers, Sound Minds takes the time to curate a bunch of information. A lot of that comes in right around after my broadcast on Sunday here. So as I say that, I'm triggered to remind you, I hope you're listening to the tag themes. Put a little bit of effort into those. I think they're a lot of fun. I think they're pretty amazing. Something that's not so judgmental. It can be error prone if it needs to be, but I think they come up pretty good. And they add a new nuance, another addition to what the content is here. And we play different versions, maybe an A side in the beginning and a B side after if there's room. There might even be a flip side and a far side for you to listen to. You can get those on the blogcaster. So there's a reason to go to the blogcaster. And maybe they're not the top 100 hits. I don't think they're actually so bad. But they're pretty good. They bring, like I said, they bring a new flavor to what I use as the titles of the blogcaster turned into songs. And Sam puts a bit of time into those after I give him what all that is. And then he puts it together and then we select which one's going to be the best one. And hopefully that is the best one for y'all. And you get to hear that all on our ingenuity, all on our intention to get you the best type of feeds that we're going to give you information in different ways, again, to try and convey these important messages that need to go out. It's just not about how much we know. It's, as I have learned, what are you going to do with what you know? That is not necessarily so easy to figure out, especially when it comes, this evil, if you will, comes flying in your face. So I hope I give people a preparation in their mind, whether or not they're fully interested. A lot of people are not. They'd rather listen to the nuts and bolts than actually how to take those nuts and bolts and build something. And however, those that have to use it, they're finding great value in it. I hope you do too. And for those of you that think that there is value, please donate to the network. However it is you can. Even with maybe ideas. I haven't thought about the ideas too much. We've been so focused on trying to get what we thought we needed done, the fundamentals done, that we really haven't been looking. I hadn't thought about it too much of getting new ideas. But maybe that's a way to bring those along too. If you have an idea, bring it in. And we never know what might be able to be brought in real quick. And it's suggestions come to the broadcast like one a long time ago. You don't know about it now, but it was brought in. So why don't you episode ID after the first hour? So when people coming in at the middle of the broadcast, they can hear which file to go look at. And I thought that was a good idea. Never thought about it. Not too production oriented that way, but your help brings that a little bit better. So thank you for those of you that are donating, and I appreciate that, certainly. And I know the crew does. And so those of you that are thinking about it, get off the fence and get you behind the woodshed and do a donation wherever you find those donate buttons. And sometimes it pays to get behind a woodshed since you're not a spectator anyway. U.S. pays compensation to viral Darth Vader protester. The activist had been detained after playing the Imperial March from Star Wars in front of the National Guard troops. Washington, D.C. has reached a settlement for the viral protester arrested in the Capitol for playing the Star Wars soundtrack near the National Guard troops during a crackdown on illegal immigration. The case stems from an incident in September last year when Sam O'Hara, a 35-year-old D.C. resident, protested the troop deployment by filming Ohio National Guard members from a distance while playing Darth Vader's Imperial March from his phone. O'Hara said he chose the soundtrack as a humorous way to protest what he viewed as a militarization of the Capitol, comparing the guardsmen to stormtroopers and telling the Associated Press that he felt like he was, quote, living in Star Wars episode or movie, close quote. O'Hara, represented by the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, sued the city, four Metropolitan Police Department officers, and an Ohio National Guard sergeant who called police to the scene. The activist argued that he was not interfering with the troops when he was handcuffed by the officers for 15 to 20 minutes after Ohio National Guard Sergeant Devon Beck called police to, quote, handle, close quote, him. He was released without charges and continued his protest. So look at that very carefully. He was just detained for 15 to 20 minutes, and that was enough. The complaint alleged violations of his First Amendment right to free speech and Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable seizures and excessive force, and sought unspecified compensatory and punitive damages. On Thursday, the ACLU filed a notice in the federal court saying Washington, D.C. officials had agreed to pay the plaintiff an undisclosed sum, describing it as a, quote, a significant amount, close quote. O'Hara agreed to drop his claim against the city and the police, but not against Beck. Quote, our right to free speech grants us the freedom to criticize the government. Government officials don't have to like it, but they can't punish someone for their speech, close quote. Scott Michaelman, legal director of the ACLU's Washington, D.C. chapter, said. The Metropolitan Police Department said in a statement that it, quote, recognizes the importance of upholding First Amendment rights of individuals to peacefully express their views, close quote, adding that, quote, the incident was referred to MPD's Internal Affairs Bureau, close quote. Does it really recognize the First Amendment if the Metro Police Department had to refer the incident to Internal Affairs Bureau and require Sam O'Hara to sue them before settling? U.S. President Donald Trump deployed more than 2,300 National Guard troops from eight states and the District of Columbia, alongside hundreds of federal agents, as part of his campaign to deport as many illegal immigrants as possible. Civil rights groups and local officials denounced the move as an abuse of power. But pursuant to 42 U.S.C. 1981, anyone subject to the jurisdiction of the United States has the right to enjoy extortions of every kind and no other. What abuse of power to denounce? Instead of civil rights, we might consider civil liberties instead, or even maybe the Constitution and supporting founding documents, you think? Maybe. Like Sam O'Hara just did. And because Metro doesn't actually recognize, let alone acknowledge, in the first instance, any such constitutional prohibition against government interference, the deployment of federal troops led to standoffs with protesters in several states. In January, federal agents killed two U.S. citizens during separate altercations in Minnesota, prompting further criticism of Trump's immigration policies. Following the backlash, Trump fired U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, while Acting Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, Director Todd Lyons resigned. He fired her from that one job, but put her into some innocuous little place dealing with the South America, the Global South, remember? Sort of like still in immigration, but not. Supreme Court limits geofence warrants in landmark ruling on digital privacy. This was a very important report here to read and finally hear. I'm always wondering why we aren't these things up front. Why do we got to wait so long? But the United States Supreme Court has issued a ruling that significantly impacts the government's ability to utilize geofence warrants. So this going back, we have Darth Vader there being able to protest, and he gets a large sum when they don't want to bring it to court. So they pay off, and he had First and Fourth Amendment violations. And here we have another one coming along, these geofence warrants, a tool that compels technology companies to provide information from all devices within a particular geographic location. In a 6-3 decision, the court determined that such practices infringe upon the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. Specifically, the court ruled that a user's, quote, location history, close quote, much like a cell phone tracking data, requires a warrant and reasonable cause before it can be accessed by government authorities. This ruling extends the logic established in previous cases involving cell phone tracking. The court noted that there is, quote, no good reason, close quote, to treat location history collected by third-party services such as Google differently from the tracking of a cell phone's movement. This decision underscores the importance of privacy in the digital age, as it emphasizes the need for law enforcement to justify the use of digital data acquisition tools by showing probable cause. And as I'm reading that, my mind turned back to the great Kobe swindle. The government, to enforce this exigence, needed to justify it, and never did. No jurisdiction globally, but no jurisdiction within the United States of America justified their decisions at all. And that's all I was asking those of you who got behind the woodshed, those that you did, and you did your research, and you studied that local communicable disease law, you found out there had to be a justification, and so you asked them about that. They didn't have one. And so for you, those that took a step forward and defended yourself, the non-spectator that she is, you were able to get them to back off, at least from the enforcement, although all those mandatory things, weren't you? If they went that far. But they didn't. How cool is that? The implications are profound, not only for how investigations are conducted, but also for the tech companies that handle vast amounts of years of data. Geofence warrants have been controversial due to their broad and sweeping nature. They have been used in several high-profile investigations, raising questions about the potential for overreach and the privacy rights of individuals who are inadvertently caught in these data dragnets. Inadvertently caught. For those of you thinking you don't do anything wrong. Caught doing what inadvertently? And as I've read numerous times behind Woodshed, they make it up. Civil liberties advocates have been critical of such warrants, arguing they effectively bypass traditional requirements for search warrants, thus posing significant privacy concerns. The ruling aligns with growing judicial scrutiny of digital privacy rights. The court's decision represents a shift towards tightening control over the use of digital data in law enforcement. And why was that a question? Why is this whole thing even a question? Why the shift only now? How many people are harmed under a presumption the government is always right? That an artificial entity is more sovereign than the people or their posterity that created it? Is the problem with the Supreme Court of the United States and the just us system? In recent years, the judiciary has increasingly recognized the complexity and sensitivity of digital privacy, a theme that has resonated across various cases pertaining to digital surveillance. Increasingly recognized shows the problem where justice wears a blindfold. Aren't they supposed to look at the totality of the circumstance in order to do justice in the end? This landmark decision marks a pivotal moment in the ongoing dialogue between privacy rights and law enforcement capabilities. Well, that was a big jump into capabilities, wasn't it? Not just the acquiring of a piece of information, no, the capabilities. As digital data continues to play an ever-growing role in investigations, clarity and protection surrounding its use become critical. The Supreme Court's ruling sets a precedent that will likely influence future legislative and judicial considerations around data privacy and the appropriate balance between security and individual rights. But securing whom in a free country of limited government? And the Supreme Court precedent admits to already being behind the need, where it is only now addressing location history. So at least now, if it wasn't understood before, wink, wink, that was off limits. And now we go, what? Just location history? Just these things? What? How much more? And so this becomes the ongoing kick the can down the road that I always, when I saw what the Supreme Court does, how they limit the cases, I realized we're not in a justice system. We're in just a system where the government is holding its own. The judges are not the stewards of the trust of the people like they're supposed to be. And I can refer you, as I did the study, to the Constitution of Virginia, where you see that written in the first three or four articles. The judges are right there to protect the people. So it's there. That's the original colony states that turns into what we are now. It gives us an example. Or as another article put it more succinctly, Supreme Court rules cops need a warrant to vacuum up phone location data. United States Supreme Court on Monday ruled that people have a reasonable expectation of privacy with regard to mobile phone geolocation data, a decision privacy advocates have sought for years. Why years? Why is the presumption allowing the government to violate inviolability? Is the problem here. The court's ruling in Chatry versus United States concluded, quote, police officers conducted a Fourth Amendment search when they acquired Chatry's location data from Google because an individual has a reasonable expectation of privacy in his cell phone location information, close quote. Police did so through a so-called geofence warrant. The warrant required Google to provide mobile phone location history collected from within 150 meters radius of a credit union during the hour around when it was robbed. The Fourth Amendment protects against unreasonable searches and seizures by requiring authorities to obtain a warrant based upon probable cause. And I'm going to just interject here. That standard is really dropped. If anybody of you have been looking, you see how so-called probable cause just seems to be someone's opinion anymore. So the judges are not standing in that gap that we needed to do. Not like we need them. That's what their duty is, their obligation in the position they take the oath to do and to uphold. The court's conclusion does not resolve Chatry's case, which it has been remanded to the U.S. Court of Appeals to assess the disputed warrant's validity. But it does make clear that location history data requires a warrant. And it amplifies the impact of Carpenter versus the United States, a 2018 ruling that limited warrantless searches of cell site location information, the designated CSLI. In a social media post, Stanford law professor Orrin Kerr expressed surprise that Justice Kavanaugh joined the majority in the 6-3 decision. Quote, if you're a privacy advocate, Chatry is just about the best possible outcome you could have ever expected, close quote, said Kerr, who in 2024 argued Chatry had no Fourth Amendment right to his location data because Chatry had opted in to Google's location history. This becomes very interesting and important. Privacy advocates who have been asking U.S. courts for at least two decades to affirm that the Fourth Amendment protects location data are thrilled with the decision. EFF Surveillance Litigation Director Andrew Crocker, who co-authored the EFF amicus brief in the case, said, quote, we applaud the Supreme Court's decision in Chatry v. United States. The courts reaffirm that you have an expectation of privacy in location data that reveals your movements in the physical world and that even short-term surveillance of these movements is a search subject to the Fourth Amendment, close quote. Crocker said that in recent years, police have come to rely on geofence warrants and have violated the privacy of many innocent bystanders. Violating innocence. Those whom are innocent, violated in their fundamental rights for those thinking, what's it matter if you aren't doing anything wrong? He said while the court stopped short of disallowing geofence warrants entirely, the EFF intends to push for their elimination in lower courts. The U.S. government argued that the Fourth Amendment didn't apply because Chatree had opted into sharing his location history with Google. But the court found that argument, quote, meritless, close quote. Quote, the argument ignores how and why Google users turn on location history. Google repeatedly prompts users to turn on the service, often warning that the devices will not work correctly. Otherwise, while not disclosing in that prompt how frequently users' location information would be recorded, how precise it would be, or how it might be given to the government, close quote, the court's majority said. But maybe it's just time to de-Google our lives. Just completely get rid of it. And you can't. So maybe consider this and all the other ones that are tracking and tracing you. Maybe just don't agree. But even the opt-in didn't protect the police. And that's the killer one I thought was very interesting, that you have a bit of a safeguard there. You have to go look back at the Fourth Amendment of what that is, why that is. Aidan Haleman, legal director of the ACLU of Virginia, said in a statement that the court's decision confirms that law enforcement cannot use new technology to conduct warrantless surveillance. And if that's true, it's that broad. This is bigger than I'm thinking people are appreciating. Quote, we do not lose our right to privacy simply because we use a cell phone, quote, quote, says Heilman. And if it's new technology generally, way more than just your cell phone. Google in 2021 reported that geofence warrants began taking off around 2018, and by 2020 represented about 25% of all U.S. warrants it received. 2 years later, in an effort to reduce its role as a law enforcement data dispenser, the search biz announced changes to its handling of location history data by storing the data on device instead of it on its servers. Alas, there's an entire data broker industry that has been selling nationally private data to customers, whether that's the government or businesses. Purchase histories, browsing history data, chatbot logs, and the like continue to be bought and sold. In March, a bipartisan set of U.S. senators attempted to close the so-called data broker loophole with an introduction of the bill called the Government Surveillance Reform Act. It was designed to reauthorize Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, quote, with necessary Fourth Amendment protections to block the federal government from buying Americans' private data from shady sources, close quote. But it'd be okay to violate your Fourth Amendment if the source wasn't so shady. Those approved sites that steal your stuff. Yet advance have overtaken the bill. In June, Section 702 of FISA, a law that was allowed the warrantless collection of information, was allowed to expire, a decision that can be read as a vote of no confidence in the current administration, not just this administration. The law was bad at any administration, behind which, should you hear me read and advocate against letting that go, letting it go away. Why do we need it? Why do we need to feel that there needed to be an amendment to a bad law to give us back our rights? So now there's an opportunity to rethink how personal data is collected, stored, and sold. And so when does the Supreme Court require the Fourth Amendment to kick in? Only after it's collected? Shouldn't the Fourth Amendment be required to be met before the collection of data to remove any misunderstanding of future governmental fundamental rights breaches and keep the republic in its limited form as intended? Is FISA necessary at all, or the carve-out at all necessary within a bad law, as I said, when the Fourth Amendment is interpreted presumptively rather than being based upon what the government can get away with? Come August, in California, data brokers will be required to process opt-out requests from the state's data request and opt-out platform, DROP. Why has the California legislature decided to cost you extra time and expense and electricity in opting out instead of requiring the data brokers to process the opt-in requests? Which, if they had done it that way, wouldn't need more than a law that prohibited universal or non-consensual opt-in. they're going to automatically process those. You don't even need a word to say about it, right? And since opting in means nothing relative to the Fourth Amendment, as we just heard the Supreme Court declare, why allow opt-in at all to remove any confusion? That's the way forward for privacy. Minimize data collection and storage and provide a privacy enforcement mechanism. That's what I just said. I know what you said. The privacy enforcement mechanism is the Fourth Amendment and not infringing it. And not the first to learn about assembling an ARO-prone first workforce, but one of the biggest and oldest. Indeed, it is being reported nearly a third of hiring managers who eliminated roles after AI layoffs have had to rehire human workers for those exact same positions. The Ford at Neustis just mentioned, Ford Graybeard rehire is a warning shot for AI-first workforces. Yes, take note, workforces. You've gotten one opportunity here to identify and survive an AI takeover in what AI can't do, and to make sure it stays that way. The automaker's decision to rehire 350 veteran engineers signals a wider reckoning over how far companies can go in replacing human expertise with AI. Error pronation. Ford Motor Company built its artificial intelligence strategy on an assumption that turned out to be expensive, that automated systems fed enough data could substitute for institutional knowledge that veteran engineers carry in their heads. That AI could be fed enough data. What does that say about surveillance? I mean data centers being able to beat their promotion when there is never going to be any data that can be transferred in the experience and applied wisdom of mankind. That AI could be fed enough data to justify a genuine public purpose takings claim, no matter how large it is. As a reverse proof, these aren't data centers, but government surveillance systems that cannot meet the needs of the people and a breach of the establishment of the government taking power claimed, a fraudulent use of felony extortion, felony coercion, and treason. By June 2026, the Detroit automaker had quietly spent 3 years walking that assumption that automated system fed enough data could substitute for the institutional knowledge that veteran engineers carry in their heads. They'd walked that back, and they rehired those 350 experienced engineers to fix quality problems its AI tools couldn't solve. Applied to a takings claim, where would it be a genuine public purpose to get that wrong or to operate on mere assumptions? Sounds arbitrary and capricious on its face, don't it? The lesson is one HR leaders across every industry should be wise to absorb. How much more the government taking land, water, and power for surveillance, data centers, is going to go on with this clear violation to people and the clear failure of AI. Quote, mistakenly, we thought that by just introducing artificial intelligence and ingesting the design requirements that we had, that would produce a high-quality product, close quote. Charles Poon, Ford's vice president of vehicle hardware engineering in Dearborn, Michigan, told reporters following the company's announcement that it had claimed the top spot among mainstream brands in the J.D. Power 2026 U.S. Initial Quality Study. Maybe I have it wrong. Since when is the government interested in a quality product? Have I just identified yet another breach to We the People? Yes, I think I did. Read the news as notice, the Neustis, and take the opportunity to apply it. The engineers Ford brought back, referred to internally as graybeards, weren't simply being put to work on the factory floor. Their primary job was to train younger employees and reprogram the AI tools that had, in Ford's own words, fallen short. The result was tangible. Ford's chief executive officer, Jim Farley, said the initiative contributed to, quote, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, quote, quote, in reduced warranty and recall costs that the company anticipated $1 billion in cost savings in 2026 alone. What went wrong with AI rollout? Ford had deployed more than 900 AI-powered cameras across its plants to detect quality issues alongside automated tools for vehicle design. Flock, is that you? Quality control issues on top of all the constitutional violations. But the systems were only as reliable as the data used to train them. What have I said? Garbage in, garbage out. Not the totality of your experience, it's just what you data you throw in them, what they hoover up. And the company's most experienced engineers had left before that knowledge could be captured. Before that knowledge could be fully captured. Sounds pretty ominous. Companies are pulling the AI trigger too soon. They are resetting, getting prepared to fully capture that knowledge and experience. Suggests that you shall gird thy loins, engineers and professionals. Identify that uncaptured knowledge and experience, your intellectual property, and guard it. Your job may depend on it. I wonder whether AI could be used to identify that uncaptured knowledge so the workforce could avoid corporate capture and removal. Or are we to be perpetually defeated by garbage in, garbage out, austerity in, austerity out, anemia in, anemia out, ignorance in, ignorance out, error pronation? Ford now has more than 5,000 fewer workers than it did in 2020. Kumar Galhotra, Ford's chief operating officer, told journalists that the company had been, quote, relying more and more on automated quality systems, close quote, with disappointing results. As smart is not too intelligent, AI does not equate to quality, a technate bane. The specialists it brought back were tasked with hunting, quote, for failure points before a part ever reaches the plant floor, close quote. This dynamic between human expertise and AI-driven efficiency is playing out at companies across the U.S., where many organizations have made workforce cuts premised on AI delivering productivity gains that have yet to be fully materialized. Poon was direct about the root cause. Quote, artificial intelligence is a fantastic tool, but it's only as good as the information you use to train it. Over prior years, we didn't pay as much attention as we should have to the experience of our most knowledgeable engineers that have been with the company. A broader workforce warning, Ford experience is not an outlier. According to PwC's 2026 Global AI Jobs Barometer, which analyzed more than 1 billion Bravo job advertisements across 27 countries, the organization seeing the greatest productivity gains from AI are not using it to cut costs through headcount reduction. They're using it to amplify human expertise. And I just interject again, to use AI properly, you have to know something, and you have to know when it's not giving you what you need, even though you don't maybe know the future of it, where you're going. You have to be able to qualify how it's wrong right off the bat. Those things that it may be correct and you may not have the knowledge about, that's the path to travel. It's supposed to amplify our work, not replace it. And it can't even amplify at some point. Your mind still has to take it in and reassess what you're being told when you use it right. The report found that AI-exposed companies are growing headcount faster than their less exposed peers, and wages are growing faster at those companies, too. The barometer also identifies a significant shift at the entry level that should inform how HR leaders think about pipeline strategy. Based on 2.4 million Mike entry-level job postings in the U.S., AI-exposed junior roles are now 7 times more likely to require traditionally senior-level skills such as leadership, creativity, and face-to-face judgment than non-exposed roles. Job openings for these seniorized entry-level positions grew 35% since 2019, while other entry-level roles shrank 10%. The hybrid model HR leaders need to plan for. Ford isn't abandoning AI at all. The company has added more than 100,000 new AI-powered tests to identify software edge cases and stress test vehicle systems. There it is, the edge cases, that where your knowledge may not quite reach and you can use a tool to pull together things that may not be so obvious. But what are these actually? Just sophisticated test fixtures, aren't they? And they're on edge cases. Not the meat and potatoes. AI would be the spice to tweak the dish to taste a bit better. AI is best used when expertise may not be enough to solve the problem, and the engineer can use the AI to supplement existing knowledge and experience to find unrealized or not obvious complementary potential answers to apply. AI is not a sentient producer. It is a tool within the factory operated by sentient producers. What it's changed is the assumption that AI can operate independently of the humans who understand the work in ways that data alone can't capture. Can't capture. That recalibration has a direct read across for people strategy. Organizations that have aggressively cut and experienced workers in anticipation of AI-driven efficiency may find themselves in the same position Ford did, needing to rehire expertise they let go at significant cost to fix problems the technology couldn't anticipate. A technocrat's horror. What technology couldn't anticipate? The more productive framing, both for workforce planning and for AI adoption, is one that treats the two as complementary. Research on connected workforce intelligence and talent activation shows the organizations running their people strategy as an integrated system significantly outperform peers, with firms achieving up to 8 times stronger financial performance when skills visibility is embedded into real-time talent decisions. The questions Ford's pivot raises are worth asking now before a quality or performance shortfall forces the issue. Which institutional knowledge in your organization exists only in the minds of senior employees? How are you capturing and transferring it before those employees leave? And where are the gaps in your AI training data that experienced human judgment currently fills? Well, how about man's judgment? That doesn't fit in a humanist's man as animal, beast of burden paradigm, does it? I've been ignoring this word human the whole time, but here we are. How about man's judgment with an E in the middle? Judgment. Ford's Graybeard program suggests these questions have a dollar value attached to them. It sounds like workers need to keep their thought skills and institutional knowledge to themselves if that experience will have any enduring value to a company that they can't steal and store for AI. And to head this off, China will be attempting to solve these problems, and I'm going to get to a tab in a moment to show you this, by integrating the teaching of how to use AI, not just here, use AI, as in dumb Down syndrome America. So proper AI use is ingrained in the little ones, together with the encouragement to become an engineer or professional specialist capable of correctly using AI as a complementary tool, not as a chauffeured cognition crutch. And though even the Chinese ambition is to integrate AI in the schools seems experimental yet and not too advanced, given a focus on training the proper use of AI, not merely using the infernal error-prone contraption within one generation, China will advance beyond the United States at the speed of solving primary technological edge cases. And bringing that tab right up here now to talk about it, China to bring AI into every classroom, and maybe not just China, and they start giving their stuff away. China has an eyeball on what they're supposed to be doing here. Beijing wants students at all levels to learn how to use artificial intelligence, according to a new 5-year national action plan. China doesn't want students to just use AI, but it wants them to learn how to use AI, a big data distinction. China will make artificial intelligence part of a schooling for primary classes to university under a new 5-year plan issued by the State Council. The document published on Monday calls for AI to be taught, quote, across all educational stages, close quote, to enhance students' AI literacy and teach them to understand the technology and use it to identify and solve problems. The plan presents the move as a part of a wider update of China's school system with greater emphasis on science, critical thinking, innovation, and there it is, innovation. That'll tie back into that sustainability and sustainable development. And links between education, research, and industry. It also calls for AI, big data, and other digital tools to be used in exams, assessments, and school management while strengthening ethics rules and safety oversight. Some Chinese schools have already been testing how far the technology can go in everyday lessons and have been using AI for calligraphy feedback, writing assessment, and language practice, as well as for helping teachers prepare lessons, assess students, and create personalized assignments. China's move comes as other major economies are seeking to build AI into national development plans. In April, Russia President Vladimir Putin instructed the government to prepare a national AI deployment plan to integrate the technology across all sectors, from industry and logistics to energy and education. Putin noted that AI was reshaping, quote, the entire life of the country, close quote, and stressed that Russia, quote, must possess the most advanced technologies and rely on fully sovereign domestic products, close quote, particularly for defense and security. But get that, the entire life of the country. There's no escape from the Borg. Russian universities have also been expanding AI-related training. Last year, Moscow State University recently launched a dedicated AI facility with 36 bachelor's and 36 master's degree spots. Tyumen State University has also recently proposed a model in which AI can act as an expert consultant and a, quote, sparring partner, quote, sparring partner, close quote, for students, while the human teacher remains a mentor. Now, have they told anyone before that AI is a AI-prone sparring partner that knocks you silly, cognitively, neurally, and behaviorally punch drunk? But I've shown through recent studies in the past episodes that in the minimum, AI creates cognitively deficient people. How is China going to fix students made cognitively, neurally, and behaviorally deficient when using AI into productive people? Is quite the conundrum. A gamble, I suspect, China is taking that it can do so without destroying itself in the AI error prone process. But remember, AI is a tool that requires one know well the subject matter to be able to know immediately when AI is out to lunch or tripping on dosed system coolant. China already might know, despite the harmful cognitive, neural, and behavioral consequences in the uninitiated use of AI, providing students a primary occupational goal, demanding cultural excellence, ideological warm and fuzzies, providing knowledge and experience, that the proper use of AI can attain that excellence, however warm and fuzzy feeling may avoid the maladies caused when AI pronation meets the unwashed masses. Companies are finding this out the hard way, right, Ford Company? As we just read, the automaker Ford is now already required to rehire the graybeard engineers in a stark warning shot at AI-first workforces. But governments and their subject or citizens will technocracy harder to steal your peaceful life, your good land, water, and cheap abundant power. Climate change be damned, because, say it with me, climate change was never about the weather. Right, Greta? And for that reason, China and Russia fully embrace sustainable development and the technocratic governance that they have planned for. In May, Putin also announced plans to establish an international AI alliance, bringing together scientific, academic, and business communities from multiple countries. The goal of the alliance is to deepen international cooperation on developing sovereign AI models, creating interconnected computing and energy infrastructure, and adapting AI technologies to local needs, the president said. From global to local. Can you smell the global technocracy in the air? Kumbaya, y'all. And isn't the entire global equity market an edge case ripe for AI exploitation, as is the fiat system excuses to continually impose austerity upon your life? And it's gone, don't you know? AI agents could trigger market meltdown, so says the Bank of England of all folks. Autonomous tech could execute trades without human oversight, increasing the risk of market meltdowns, UK officials warn. I think Ford knows that already, right? AI agents that can make decisions and carry out transactions independently could soon operate across the financial system, the Bank of England has warned, adding that relying on human oversight might no longer be realistic. Bank of England Deputy Governor Sarah Breeden made the warning at the European Central Bank's annual forum in Sintra on Tuesday as leading developers shift from generative AI chatbots to agentic systems. The Crown, the City of London, not Britain, warning. Unlike generative AI tools such as ChatGPT and Gemini and Claude, which generate text, images, and code in response to prompts, agentic AI is designed to complete multi-step tasks with limited human intervention. Generators of text, image, and code, not generators of intelligence. Now enhanced to act upon that lack of intelligence by design. Rather than merely recommending an investment or suggesting a purchase, an AI agent could execute trades, make payments, buy goods and book services without requiring human approval for every action. But what could go wrong, folks? Breeden said the financial system is likely to, quote, evolve into one that operates more autonomously at scale and speed, close quote. Well, on a positive note then, it isn't quantum yet. As AI agents become more capable, quote, relying on a human in the loop for all agent actions is unlikely to be realistic, she said, arguing that the current regulatory framework, quote, were not built to contemplate, close quote, this scenario. Unrealistic is an understatement here. It's admitted AI is an unknowable black box contraption, and yet they proceed to allow it in the den of vipers and vampire squid, the grand usurious toxic derivative fiat casino of the money changers at the expense and to the detriment of Man Street. Breeden warned that AI agents trained on similar data and responding to the same market signals could exhibit herd behavior, making identical trading decisions simultaneously and amplifying market volatility during periods of stress. Regulators should examine, quote, whether guardrails are needed, analogous to circuit breakers or kill switches that would limit or stop trading market-wide if faulty AI models cause market meltdown, close quote, Breeden said. But, Bertha, they already shut down program trading when it exceeds market guardrails. Those guardrails didn't stop the market collapse of 2008. And what does she mean if AI models are faulty? AI models are error prone. This is already known. They also have been shown to exceed any guardrails put in place. She also urged central banks to prepare for more frequent, quote, technical surprises, close quote, saying the recent advances in AI have already exceeded policymakers' expectations. Well, of course it has. Computer program trading is not new. It's a feature, not a bug, right? And it provides a great cover for to manipulate the casino financial system where the house always wins. So expect, quote, technological surprises, close quote, by the technate, as the they bring tighter control upon your life. It's part of the plan to take you out. The they want you in digital to make their manipulations easier, cheaper, and more convenient for them. It's so easy, folks. But they're building a system they complain about already known to be exceedingly vulnerable, now AI enhanced, but proceed headlong to implement that system of universal control should be obvious. And no one of representative note sees a problem with this insanity. Even now? is a planned destruction, or as they promote, a transformation outside of any national establishment. So do you hear the warning? To get out of her, my people, and just as important in the first instance, do not enter in their trap with all your will. I think we're told there is only one good, sound, honest money. Maybe it's time to make that switch and get you behind the woodshed. The CIA chief warns AI-powered digital nuclear weapon. Can you imagine all the kids in China learning how to do AI and they focus on any government? In this case, particularly probably the United States. Digital nuclear weapons now. Remember, we were just talking about shifting maybe. Maybe we don't need the atomic bombs. Maybe Iran started to show us that. Now we're watching this shift in discussion. Now digital becomes a nuclear weapon. The remarks follow a Five Eyes Spy Alliance warning that cyber warfare could become a critical threat within months. So here we have Netanyahu saying that Iran's going to have the nuclear bomb within months, within minutes, saying that since 1994 or so. That's right. So keep forcing the entire society into the blast zone. This is yet another warning to keep out of her, my people, or better yet, don't enter in. AI-driven cyber offensive tools can be compared to, quote, digital nuclear weapons, close quote, CIA Director John Ratcliffe said, warning that they could fuel rivalries among global powers, you think? Ratcliffe made the comparison on Tuesday in a speech at the Amazon Web Services Summit in Washington, where he discussed the spy agency's efforts to speed up the acquisition of private sector products for its own use, like they don't have enough. Quote, AI tools will only continue to raise the stakes in our competition with all of America's adversaries, Ratcliffe said. It would be, quote, not misplaced to refer to their capabilities as akin to the digital nuclear weapons, close quote, he added, citing discussions within the administration of the United States President Donald Trump. Ratcliffe claimed the rival nations, quote, work to steal and to manipulate America's advancements for their own ends and gains, close quote. But there's nothing stopping Israel becoming integrated, reorganized, and put into the U.S. military through Section 2024 in the Futures Act, is there? We're also worried about all the threats out there. They're bringing that enemy into our gates right now. Maybe you'll look over there while they sneak them in the back. Promise of USAI dominance. Promises of rapid advances in AI capabilities, including in hacking, have been a constant feature of the global digital technological race. Last month, the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance, comprising Australia, Canada, and New Zealand, the UK, and the US, warned that frontier models are, quote, anticipated to exceed current industry expectations, fundamentally transforming both offensive and defensive cyber capabilities, close quote, adding that, quote, the timeline is not years, it is months, close quote. U.S. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, echoed the warning during an Intelligence Committee hearing, saying the National Security Agency Chief Joshua Rudd had told him that Anthropic's Mythos 5 model, quote, broke into almost all of our classified systems, not in weeks, but in hours, close quote. The description, quote, simplified, close quote, the spy agency's controlled tests, which were aimed at AI-assisted identification of cybersecurity flaws rather than actual hacking. The ongoing boom in the American AI sector is based on hopes of massive future profits. Now, what happened to American security? They're not interested in American security. They're interested in massive future profits. Hopes of massive future profits to justify the hundreds of billions, Bravo dollars, in investment. Some analysts have, talk about pie in the sky, folks. At any rate, I thought we weren't supposed to do that. Thought it wasn't wise to do that. Some analysts have described it as a financial bubble, warning that it can crash unless U.S. tech giants achieve global dominance. But there is no dominance in a black box chaos. DeepSeek moment threatens American goals. a major risk to the U.S. AI push and foreign competition able to deliver products comparable in power at far greater efficiency. China's DeepSeek app sent shockwaves through the industry in January 2025 when its R1 and V3 models proved comparable to contemporary digital engines used by ChatGPT and other U.S. rivals, but at a fraction of the cost. And let me offer, they've also come out with a new system that operates off of CPU power. They don't need the expensive and power-hungry GPUs anymore. So they're shifting over as well. Whatever they find that they have as a weakness, they are empowering themselves with that. They don't need a GPU, that NVIDIA's best GPU. They just go to their old CPUs and they make their programs run more efficient. They're actually more efficient on the CPU. U.S. officials claim the Chinese companies have essentially cheated by building its own product based on American work. Now, how is actually that when they're actually making their own hardware and they're actually making their own programs and they're running on now CPUs, not GPUs? Some of their stuff runs on GPUs, the latest stuff doesn't. A similar DeepSeek movement followed the release of Zipu's new flagship coding assistant model GLM 5.2 in mid-June, the South China Morning Post reported last week. Matt Veloso, a former vice president at Meta Platforms and Google DeepMind, described it as the, quote, first open model that passes the bar as a daily driver, close quote, but not all predictions about what AI can do have materialized. While current models are highly competitive in computer coding and data analysis, for instance, fully autonomous driving remains years behind the timeframes Tesla CEO Elon Musk presented to the public in the past. China is quickly catching up with the U.S. in manufacturing advanced microchips, which limits Washington's ability to use trade restrictions to slow down its competitors. Isn't that just the model of what the South, the global South, did? They moved over into BRICS. They started making their own currency exchangeable across borders. They're now integrating the digital, and they're doing their own technology. Come what may, enough was enough. Now they're going to go their way. Meanwhile, China's relative abundance of energy generation gives it an advantage in the AI race. How do you like that, farmers in America, getting your land stolen? They already had it worked out. A lot better than we had here in the United States, and then our people suffer. And from a crackpot calling the kettle black, AI industry is effing insane. Palantir CEO Alex Karp, whose company supplies artificial intelligence tech to the United States government, says the authorities should not trust the industry. And don't forget, he's asking people to trust war criminals after aiding and abetting Israel to kill Palestinians, furthering the genocide in Gaza and now elsewhere, such as Lebanon, and supported by a Satan Yehu-hobbled spineless president and a foreign army of Israel-only and foremost Congress critters. But also understand, military means money and control to the invasive gluttonous trash fish like carp that terrorizes native inhabitants by ranting the high holier than thous. Palantir CEO Alex Trashfish Carp has unleashed a lengthy tirade against the AI industry, arguing the Western governments and military shouldn't trust companies like OpenAI and Anthropic with sensitive data. And so we're going to trust Palantir instead? This cracked pot needs to be discarded. Karp appeared on CNBC on Wednesday to discuss Palantir's recent infrastructure partnership with NVIDIA, under which the former will sell its operating systems powered by the latter's hardware and AI models to customers as an all-in-one data analytics package. However, the interview soon spiraled into a 20-minute rant from the Palantir CEO about the state of the AI industry, of which he's a part. Most businesses and governments who work with OpenAI and Anthropic purchase tokens from these companies, which grant access to their large language models, LLMs, as a pay-as-you-go basis. While this arrangement generates vast income for the AI companies, their clients end up ripped off, Karp argued, as they hand over their money and data while gaining no control over the weights of the models, especially the tweaks that determine the choices that the models make. Essentially, the tweaks. that determine the choices that models make. Programmable ignorance here, folks. Quote, are we going to outsource the battlefield of this country to the consensus few in Silicon Valley? Close quote, he asked. That's effing insane, he said. Karp went on to accuse AI companies of selling their technology to the U.S. adversaries while refusing to work with military at home on ethical grounds before branching into tangents about wealth, tax, and the far left and far right fear of warlocks roaming the street building technology and his personal relationship with Israel. Quote, you sound pretty angry, anchor Becky Quick interjected at one point. No, Karp responded. Quote, this is the voice of America business that is being channeled through me, the neurodivergent crazy person, close quote. Channeling? Now he's a self-exalted chosen corporate prophet? A warlock? Having a lock on war? Palantir software, Karp explained, acts as a layer. Yeah, that would be the surveillance layer. A surveillance layer that's accessible by the murderous Zionist explained by someone whom described himself as the most publicly supportive CEO of Israel. Between AI models and clients, allowing companies and governments to adjust weights and keep control of their data. However, Karp's close alignment with the U.S. government and his publicly declared support for U.S. military supremacy has led some European countries to sever their ties with Palantir over fears that the company might abuse its access to their national security information to further American interests. Or Zionist political movement terrorist interests. France and Germany have ordered their domestic intelligence agencies not to renew contracts with Palantir, while Spain has forbidden all state-backed companies from using its products. With seditious seed money coming from an enemy within, Trump onshores the existential danger, and Congress makes that existential threat to all Americans permanent. Founded by Peter Thiel in 2003, with seed money from the CIA, Palantir has a, quote, affirmative obligation to participate in defense of the nation, close quote, Karp wrote on a social media earlier this year. Several months earlier, U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, another Trump-sympathizing Zionist terrorist in the Gates, said the U.S. government is, quote, thinking about acquiring a stake in several key defense contractors, including Palantir, is fascism, folks, onshoring public-private terrorism. Fascism, by definition, with Trump's enthusiastic support and personal profit, it turns out. Apparently, he's increased his wealth by 30% being president this time. He learned from his loss, and Trump won, didn't he? Now, I wonder how this deep state channeling Karp would fare being relegated to the tides and fate of a small rock outcropping in the South China Sea. This is BTWRLM 675. And each time you ask AI for help, it's a water and energy suck. Artificial intelligence surveillance, data centers, are devouring precious resources. Artificial intelligence and the data centers they require use growing amounts of energy and are water hogs. And AI companies aren't transparent about how much those resources they use. Experts say, each time you turn to the internet and seek an AI-fueled response, it's gobbling up precious resources. Quote, AI is going in the opposite direction to the decarbonization efforts, close quote, says cognitive computer specialist Sasha Lucioni. Quote, we should be thinking about where we are going forward. The cost? Last year, global data centers used 448 trillion watt-hours of electricity, more than all but 10 countries, and that usage is expected to more than double in the next 4 years, per a new report from the United Nations University. By 2030, just the electricity the data centers use, not including the massive amounts of water needed to cool them, would require nearly 2.5 trillion gallons of water, which is enough drinking water for the entire world for 1.7 years, says Kaveh Madani, a water scientist for the United Nations University and co-author of the report. More numbers. Getting an AI text response is the equivalent of using an efficient light bulb for 2.5 minutes. But that's being done 2.5 billion times a day with ChatGPT alone, according to the report and Mandani. Using AI to generate a complex video is the equivalent of 42 hours of that light bulb burning and using a gallon of water, he notes. Advice from experts. The simple answer is to just use AI less often. Don't use it for calculations, directions, store hours, recipes, or shopping lists, which are all searches people used to do without AI, but now do it with AI, wasting power and water, Lucioni says. Quote, you can generate a chocolate chip cookie recipe with Claude, or you can open a damn book, close quote, Lucioni said. Quote, you really don't need Claude, close quote. When you do make a query, make it concise. More information translates into more computing, more energy, and water used. There's no need to be polite and don't give unnecessary background info. Many search engines, including Google, answer via AI and promote it without users asking for machine learning to kick in. You have to opt out of AI when you should have to opt in, Lucioni says. My complaint about the other story, isn't it? They opt you in, and they should be opting you out. They should be processing you in when you ask, not just taking it without informed consent. Or consent. As we found out, it doesn't matter if you opt in. You still have a Fourth Amendment right. That's pretty cool, don't you think? Finally, we get to hear that. Opt out of AI in Google searches by putting minus AI at the end of your search. So Google opts in to be a power waster, causing your electrical bill to be much higher. Where's global warming when you need it? And ask the regulator why it didn't take a hard look at these billionaire big data types before adversely affecting your needs. Maybe a flood of letters to your state power regulator to order AI off until asked for by the web searcher. It's not too late, quote, you are not obliged to use AI for everything, close quote, Lucioni notes, but she adds, big tech companies are making it hard by, quote, integrating generative AI into everything. There's like this bait and switch going on, close quote. So who's going to get thirsty first, the students or the data centers? German court rules state can spy on country's most popular party. The domestic intelligence agency Bavarian office can now continue surveilling the local chapter of Alternative for Germany, AfD. So how do you feel about those data centers now? The Bavarian Administrative Court of Appeal has given the local office of Germany's domestic intelligence agency the green light to continue surveilling the state's charter of Alternative for Germany. The right-wing opposition party has consistently pulled ahead of its mainstream rivals nationwide, despite facing pressure on both the federal and regional levels. Founded in 2013, the AfD advocates tougher immigration laws and also opposes Germany's support for Ukraine, including sanctions against Russia. In the federal elections last February, it came in second at 20%, winning 152 seats in the 630-seat Bundestag. However, the party was excluded from coalition talks and government formation as part of a policy known as the firewall in German politics. On Wednesday, the court rejected the AfD's appeal against monitoring by the Federal Office of the Protection of the Constitution. The party's regional chapter was placed under state surveillance in 2022, and lower courts have already dismissed its challenges. Bavaria's highest administrative court has now ruled that the verdict is final, determining that the AfD's objections are, quote, unfounded, close quote. The latest ruling says earlier court decisions already sufficiently addressed the legal basis for surveillance, with the Federal Administrative Court deeming such AfD-linked statements on re-migration Muslims and alleged calls for the overthrow of Germany's free democratic order as going beyond constitutionally permissible criticism. Last May, the federal BFD office upgraded AFD's classification to, quote, confirmed right-wing extremist, close quote, prompting the party to sue. Days later, the domestic intelligence agency suspended the designation pending the outcome of the legal appeal. In February, an administrative court in Cologne, considering the appeal, granted a temporary injunction in favor of the AFD pending a final decision. Should the BFV secure the, quote, confirmed right-wing extremist, close quote, label, it would gain wider powers to surveil the AFD and its members, including through wiretaps and informants. The party is already subject to a lower-level designation that permits monitoring, though under tighter judicial controls. At the same time, several regional authorities have moved already by treating local AFD chapters as surveillance priorities. Earlier this year, the state of Lower Saxony imposed the confirmed right-wing extremist status on the regional branch of the AFD, alleging that, quote, holds our state and our democratic institutions in contempt, close quote, and views people with migrant backgrounds as, quote, second-class citizens, close quote. In four other German states, Brandenburg, Saxony, Saxony-Anhalt, and Thuringia, the local AFD branches are likewise deemed a confirmed right-wing extremist entity, while the Rhineland-Palatinate and Saarland, the party has been declared a suspected case. Meanwhile, an INSA opinion poll earlier this month indicated that the AFD was Germany's most popular party at 29%. At the same time, 77% of the respondents said they were dissatisfied with Chancellor Merz's performance, the worst rating of his tenure, according to Bild, which published the survey findings. And this broadcast would be outlawed if it were in the EU, where apparently all y'all there don't have the right to acquire information or knowledge, meaning you don't also have that freedom of speech or the freedom of thought. EU court backs criminal prosecution for sharing an RT video. Private individuals can face criminal prosecution and even prison for sharing the broadcaster's content online, according to a new ruling. I'm pausing as I'm reading right from an RT.com website content that you could probably see on video, or you have the link, you can see it yourself. Private individuals can face criminal prosecution and even prison for sharing the broadcaster's content online, according to the new ruling. The EU's top court has ruled that private individuals can face criminal prosecution for posting RT videos on public websites, widening the bloc's crackdown on Russia media. Maybe those of you in Europrison might consider, well, anonymize servers outside the Europrison and use Tor over Tails to erase everything you get online session by session as a thought. The Court of Justice of the European Union issued the ruling on Thursday in a case from Germany where three people were being prosecuted for publishing RTDE videos on a freely accessible website. The Court of Justice? Germany? Book burning? The entire library now, if one source can be burned, any can't they? Hitler would be jealous. And the German people put up with that? And the rest of Europe? Now, there's no right of apathy in this. And the peoples of Europe don't boot the EU in this court of so-called justice to the curb? It's justice to have uninformed, propagandized, perception-managed people? What of your purported democracy, then? I'm looking at you, America. The site did not charge readers and was financed only through voluntary donations. The CJEU, however, said that made no difference and ruled that all persons who are, quote, directly and indirectly, close quote, responsible for making banned content available to the public can be treated as, quote, operators, close quote, under EU sanctions rules. The judges argued it was irrelevant if the individuals were running a business, how long the content was available, or how widely it was spread. Under the German law cited in the ruling, the violations of EU sanction-based media bans can carry up to 5 years in prison. Hitler wishes he was living today, doesn't he? Some say he still does. Well, certainly, what Russia is now fighting in the neo-Zio-Nazi regimes popping up and exposing themselves is what the problem is, isn't it? The ruling effectively pushes the EU ban on RT beyond broadcasters, platforms, or media companies, allowing for the criminal prosecution of any individual accused of making RT content publicly available online. The EU banned RT and Sputnik, among other Russian media outlets, after the Ukraine conflict escalated in 2022. Brussels said the sanctions would remain in place until the end of the Ukraine conflict, and after Moscow ceases to conduct, quote, disinformation and information manipulation action against the EU, quote, quote. Against the EU? I thought this was a German law against Russia? And beyond that, what about the peoples of Europe? Ostensibly only a forum for support of national economic activity that merely aims to promote peace. You're hearing this, NATO? Trump? To promote peace, stability, and trade and economic cooperation among its member states while ensuring the protection of human rights and respecting fundamental rights and freedom. Who in Hades is the EU to have any say relative to the broader needs of the people in each of the countries of Europe? Who are these chosen usurpers promoting disinformation and information where feigning authority to disregard and infringe fundamental rights in man, respecting fundamental rights and freedoms? Sounds like this ruling is a violation of the international rights of the people to self-determination, which allows people to determine their political status and pursue not just economic, but also their social and cultural development. This principle of self-determination being recognized in international law, particularly through the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. There's other treaties and stuff out there, but you'll find it there for those of you who want to read about it. Now, how do people freely determine their political status when the information available under penalty of prison and fine is controlled by an illegal occupier not constrained by law? The measures were followed by platform blocks, app store removals, banking restrictions, and personal sanctions against media figures and journalists accused of working with Russian outlets. And now the term working with doesn't need an arm's-length transaction, and no one challenged that? Mission creep much, EU creeps? How does infringing on the acquisition of information, the censorship of information, the crippling of critical thought protect? In the first instance, protect human rights, so-called, let alone respect fundamental rights and freedoms. Germany had targeted RT even before the block-wide ban, with RTDE facing licensing pressure, platform bans, banking problems, and regulatory action. RT has vehemently condemned the restrictions and rejected the EU's accusation, stressing that the bloc has consistently failed to point to a single example, a single grain of evidence of false reporting. It is an example needed. Such an example is not required in the right of self-determination. That right isn't to government or its instrumentalities or non-governmental bureaucracies, but to the people themselves, inviolably. That's what respecting fundamental rights and freedoms is. Moscow has repeatedly condemned the restrictions of censorship and an information war against Russia, accusing EU governments of using the Ukraine conflict as a pretext to silence dissent, suppress Russian language media, and intimidate journalists who challenge the mainstream Western narrative. The censorship and information war against Russia? That's not the half of it. Where are the peoples of the nations of Europe to challenge this war against their own right of self-determination under the guise of an internationally violative law of one nation, the universal principle of which the peoples themselves cannot remove to the exclusion of those invoking it, let alone Germany? Right, Donbass? Oh, wait, that's right. In this non-spectator sport arena, that they do it to you if and you let them, and the license, the universal right, to alter or abolish extends to them to harm all y'all. And why might the most moral oppressor want to censor Russia? Well, it's been a vocal critic of Germany not defending itself against an NATO, a NATO, and of which it's taken this long to settle on which scapegoat they're going to use to continue to hide the fecklessness of the German government not protecting its economy or energy structuring from U.S. overthrow, while it also implements the austere future that they want against its own people. And yet, another reason to boot the EU for covering up what the reported evidence shows as a NATO member, a U.S.-UK.-Norwegian-assisted attack against a NATO member, Germany. What's a feckless German chancellor to do? Germany now treating Nord Stream attack as a war crime. Finally, officially a war crime. But who are you going to say did it if you're a complicit government saboteur and disinformation and information manipulation artiste? German prosecutors have charged the Ukrainian suspect in the 2022 sabotage of Nord Stream gas pipelines with a war crime, according to local media reports. The indictment was served on the suspect, identified by the media as a former Ukrainian Special Forces member, Sergei Kuznetsov, this week. Federal prosecutors originally accused the suspect of committing, quote, anti-constitutional sabotage, close quote, for severing a critical energy supply route. They ultimately deemed it a war crime, treating the incident as part of the Russian-Ukraine conflict, as well as apparently suspecting foreign state involvement in the attack. And remember, Ukraine's not a part of NATO, which means that a non-NATO member attacked NATO, and NATO didn't step up against Ukraine. But this is more like mistreating and misinforming through disinformation campaign of the incident for domestic consumption for the feckless government convenience. According to German authorities, that's right, because the outlawed Russian broadcaster and anyone not in arm's length transaction referring their opinion might provide a different observation than the German government. The 49-year-old suspect has supposedly led a small group of Ukrainian saboteurs who allegedly sailed to the pipelines on a small rented yacht, planting explosives at a depth of some 100 meters using commercial diving gear. The explosion severed three of the four pipelines that carried Russian natural gas to Germany. Moscow has long doubted the theories that pipelines were attacked by amateur Ukrainian saboteurs and instead alleges the involvement of Western intelligence. A court document published earlier this year suggested that German investigators also suspect involvement of an unspecified state actor in the attack and treated the blast as an intelligence service operation. Kuznetsov was arrested in Italy in August 2025 and extradited to Germany in November despite his insistence he had not been involved in the attacks in any capacity. Another suspect, identified as a diving instructor Vladimir Zurovlov, was detained in Poland last September under a European arrest warrant. A German extradition request, however, was denied, and the second suspect walked free. Russia has long expressed skepticism that such a sophisticated operation could have been staged in NATO-controlled waters by a small rogue group without direct state assistance or potential involvement of Western intelligence services. Moscow has also criticized the lack of transparency and the refusal of EU states to allow Russian investigators to access the scene of the blast, suggesting the bloc's officials have been searching for private scapegoats instead of seeking the establishment of true circumstances of the September 2022 attack. But it's illegal for the peoples of the nations of Europe to acquire information apart from the misinformation, disinformation, and perception management campaign to discern the truth themselves. And Europeans still believe they live in something politically democratic? And speaking of the unspeakable, something I don't think even Hitler did, babies were special targets of Israeli killings, a UN probe panel chief says. A clear pattern of attacks targeting children is evident, Justice S. Muralidhar told RT India. The attacks by Israel on Gaza show a targeted annihilation of children that should be punished, the head of the UN panel that probed the excesses told RT India. The violence unleashed by Israeli forces was, quote, unjustified and disproportionate in considerable terms, close quote, Justice Mayra Lidar, the chair of UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, said in an exclusive interview. Quote, the excuse that Hamas could be using hospitals and schools as a basis to carry out its attacks will not justify completely demolishing 97% of all of Gaza's schools, close quote, he said. The Gaza war began after Hamas-led attack on southern Israel on October 7, 2023, in which around 1,200 people were killed and more than 250 taken hostage. And remember, we found out after that the cannibal directive was in full force and effect, and Israel killed its own people, those young people at the concert. Israel's subsequent military operation devastated much of Gaza, killing over 73,000 Palestinians and injuring more than 173,000, according to local health officials, and other information says it's much greater. And it wasn't just killing. It was murderous genocide. Mayra Lidar presented the findings at the UN panel on Tuesday and discussed the Israeli violations against children, citing a pattern of targeted attacks on children. He said, but when you shoot a 10-year-old baby breastfeeding on his mother through his head, you can by no means label such a baby as an enemy of the state of Israel and justify these kinds of attacks, close quote. Israeli quadcopters with thermal imaging cameras can clearly distinguish a child from an adult, he said. That children were specifically targeted is clear from the number of, quote, instances of babies with gunshot wounds to their head and neck to cause maximum damage, close quote. He added that babies were aimed at with, quote, tiny cube-shaped pellets, close quote, that, quote, spread like a cluster of ammunition and destroy all the internal organs, close quote. Quote, so it became very clear that babies were special targets, close quote. Mayra Lidar, who once served as Chief Justice at the High Court in the eastern state of Odisha, said, he noted that Israeli soldiers recounted on TV how they targeted children with quadcopters, claiming that, quote, their commanders complimented them for doing that, close quote. Quote, by a collection of all of the forms of evidence, close quote, including forensic evidence, the pattern was clearly revealed. Israel carried out airstrikes on those most densely populated areas, knowing that children would constitute a sizable portion of the population, he said, adding, quote, the demolition of the hospitals is done with patients still in the hospital, close quote. Mayra Lidar noted that, quote, one of the elements of genocide is to prevent childbirths, close quote, claiming that for Israeli forces, quote, mothers who are pregnant are targets and that they are denied any nutritious intake, so the mothers are malnourished, close quote. He added that hospital equipment was destroyed while doctors were prevented from bringing in new equipment and emergency medication. Quote, so one can clearly see a pattern that reproductive health is being targeted. Newborn babies are targeted, close quote, he said, while also claiming that, quote, Israel targets the orphanages, close quote, and noting that the report cites, quote, over 58,000 orphaned children in 2 years, close quote. Mayra Lidar lamented that, quote, failure of UN member states to prevail upon Israel to comply with the three provisional orders of the International Court of Justice, which weakens the international legal order. Yes, 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 but what international legal order? And what happens when the most moral army that recognizes no legal order is a part of the U.S. military apparatus that is currently being proposed by a Congress and Senate, the House defeating Massey and Khanna's bill to remove the repugnant, odious, offensive provision, Section 224, because apparently we the people aren't calling Congress enough to let them know the what's for, the passage of which will bring the foreign enemy's intelligence agency motto, by way of deception, thou shalt make war, and the cabal's cannibal directive right into the gates to cull the homegrown American soldiers ordered to execute the cannibal directive and your breastfeeding babies, as it did the Jews so-called in Palestine on October 7th, to blame Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Iranians after them for the Zionist political movement's expansionist ritual bloodthirst agenda, right here in the several United States. States. And since we ain't talking about Jews, so-called, which is solely, and maybe solely, in the spirit and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men but of God, as you can read at Romans 2:29, how do U.S. service people of any faith or moral principle beliefs continue or choose to serve a military that yokes with a spirit of evil or that serves the synagogue of Satan, or where the enlistment is with a department of unbridled, even unwarranted war or conveniently mislabeled hostility, not peace? How are these not a moral principled reasoning for a complete conscientious exodus or objection of any faith? Or none at all. As we find out, Musk's Grok AI also helped fire 2,000 missiles at Iran. The U.S. Department of War has designated XAI data centers as battlefield infrastructure of, quote, paramount national security, close quote. Don't forget Menard, right? 168 children in that school? Elon Musk's Grok AI has become an integral part of America's war machine, and its surveillance, data centers must be treated like munitions production plants in future conflicts, according to a sworn declaration by the Pentagon's artificial intelligence chief. The statement about Grok was submitted as a part of the effort by the U.S. President Donald Trump's administration to intervene in a lawsuit seeking to restrict the operations of XAI's Colossus data centers in Memphis, Tennessee, over environmental concerns. In Tennessee, in a hub for the technocratic sustainable future that they want as well, don't forget, Cameron Stanley, the chief digital and artificial intelligence officer at the U.S. Department of War, compared XAI's computing capacity to weapons manufacturing, saying the company's ability to operate data facilities, quote, at massive scale, close quote, is, quote, as foundational to our modern defense posture as traditional munitions productions, close quote. What does CARP have to say about that? He's part of it. Stanley revealed that Grok is a crucial part of Palantir-developed Maven Smart Systems, mouth-breathing trash fish CARP, a platform that supports, quote, targeting intelligence readiness and recruitment, close quote, as well as military planning logistics. Quote, MSS Frontier workflows enabled U.S. forces to deploy over 2,000 munitions to 2,000 distinct targets within 96 hours during Operation Epic FUBAR, he said, adding that XAI is one of just three enterprise providers able to sustain, quote, mission-critical operations across secret and top-secret classified networks. He warned that if XAI's Colossus 2 facility is shut down or deprived of power, the Pentagon's capability would be impaired. The reference to the Pentagon's Project Maven places Grok inside a broader and increasingly controversial AI targeting ecosystem. It began as an algorithmic warfare initiative to help process battlefield data, while Palantir, one of Washington's most entrenched surveillance and defense contractors, has marketed its software as, quote, AI-powered kill chain, close quote, promising, quote, decision dominance from space to mud, close quote, drinking up water, fuel, peaceful environment to kill Iranians in a war that doesn't exist, just to go back to a future Hormuz for the purpose of voter manipulation as a national security purpose or a genuine public purpose for takings? How? The company's role has drawn renewed scrutiny after reports that AI-assisted targeting contributed to the U.S. strike in Manab that claimed the lives of nearly 160 schoolgirls. But remember, the other connection is that Trump removed the oversight group that it was in the military that usually would have checked that, although the whole entire military is moving away from that back check. The school was reportedly selected based on outdated data processed through Palantir's Linked Systems Incorporated Anthropic's Claude AI. Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei said last week that the reported use of AI in the Manab strike did not necessarily violate the company's, quote, red lines, close quote, stressing that a human made the final decision. When accountable to or by whom, though? Palantir executives have openly embraced the company's military mission. Ziocentric CEO Alex Trashfish Karp said last year that Palantir's purpose was, quote, to scare enemies and on occasion kill them, close quote, while the company's recent manifesto declared that, quote, hard power in this century will be built on software, close quote, and that a new era of deterrence, quote, built on AI, close quote, is beginning. XAI, which developed Grok as a rival to OpenAI's ChatGPT, has merged with SpaceX earlier this year. The company's data centers have also become a major source of compute power for other AI firms, with Google and Anthropic signing multi-billion Bravo dollar deals and agreements to rent capacity from Musk's surveillance company. Military hardware. The NAACP lawsuit alleges that XAI is violating the Clean Air Act by operating dozens of gas-burning turbines without proper permits or pollution controls. Environmental groups have accused the Trump administration of trying to override citizen lawsuits used to enforce pollution laws. But Trump doesn't care about you. He does protect the first reported trillionaires, though. The U.S.-Iran agree to stand down for now. Talks in Doha expected to focus on maritime security and oil shipping. Ships in one of the world's most critical oil corridors are getting a reprieve for now. U.S. and Iranian officials have agreed to halt several days of clashes around the Strait of Hormuz and restart peace talks, likely at the summit of Doha as soon as Tuesday, according to U.S. and other officials involved who spoke to Wall Street Journal and Axios. The U.S., again, these government propaganda centers, media. The U.S. official said commercial vessels are again expected to move freely through the choke point where traffic has plunged amid strikes and counterstrikes. A Trump administration official later confirmed to CNN that both sides have agreed to, quote, stand down for now, close quote. The pause comes after the fiercest fighting since June 17th memorandum set the stage for broader negotiations, including over Iran's nuclear program. But it didn't. It excluded the nuclear program. And the agreement was the ceasefire, including Lebanon. That never happened. Why the interactions are continuing. However, they've agreed together for now. Tehran has insisted it alone oversees traffic in the Strait, and Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi saying Iran bears, quote, responsibility, close quote, for restoring and managing shipping there. An interpretation Washington disputes, arguing that the waterway must remain open to all. Again, it's only not open to nations hostile to Iran. In recent days, Iran hit two commercial vessels and later struck Kuwait and Bahrain, while U.S. forces targeted Iranian communications, drone, and missile sites, and downed additional drones. The Hormuz dispute has already delayed planned U.S.-Iran talks in Switzerland and pushed nuclear issues into a later phase, even as U.S. officials publicly warned they won't tolerate more attacks on shipping. So, looking at this and the way this is going on, we walk together now in peace for now. It's starting to look like both the countries are duping us, doesn't it? Remember I said these geopolitical angles that have been going on, everyone got their own angle going. We don't know what they are. And as I mentioned an episode or two ago, Trump likely agreed with Iran because of the midterm elections, the vote likely reflecting the dire economy the people are experiencing, not the Israel first billionaire boys profiting, that oil and gas prices are going to be weighing in, and the strategic reserve is critically in trouble with Trump tapping it, despite knowing it has problems beyond the storing of oil to counter his failures, or that tapping the reserve didn't bring prices lower as expected, and now brings on national security and preparedness concerns, all caused by Trump's unwarranted not a war to nowhere with Iran, and because it's the economy, stupid. And here's the confirmation a couple of episodes later, any of the following of which doesn't make America great again, or while hundreds of millions of Americans pay the price and suffer stress, Trump did not end inflation and make America affordable again to bring down the prices of all goods, as he deceptively begged votes on the campaign trail. and saying now, I love inflation, which he told to reporters at the White House last month. U.S. strategic oil reserve at risk. Aging infrastructure and record low inventories could undermine future crisis responses, GAO has said. The United States Strategic Petroleum Reserve, the SPR, is at a growing risk of failing to respond effectively to future energy crises because of aging infrastructure and record low inventories, the Government Accountability Office has warned. The U.S. Congress created the SPR in 1975 after the Arab oil embargo to provide the U.S. with an emergency buffer against severe supply disruptions. And remember, I told you our economy is going back to the 70s. This is the time again. Those reserves are at the point as if they need to be rebuilt, just as if the Fed were walking right in through the beginning of the 70s. The reserve, which in theory could hold more than 700 million mic barrels of crude oil in underground salt caverns along the Gulf Coast in Texas and Louisiana, has been tapped heavily in recent years. The report made public by the Government Accountability Office earlier this week found that as of December 2025, SPR's effective oil withdrawal capacity had fallen to about 61% of original design capacity, while refill capability stood at 56%. More than one quarter of the oil stored in the reserves was temporarily unavailable because of construction work and cavern outages. The emergency stockpile has supplied more than 500 million barrels of crude oil since 1985, with nearly 70% of the volume drawn down between 2014 and 2025. That was Trump 1 as well, right? The 180 million barrel emergency withdrawal in 2022 following the escalation of the Ukraine conflict put the SPR's capabilities to test. In March 2026, the Department of Energy began another 172 million barrel release in response to the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran launched in late February, which sent crude prices skyrocketing and disrupting global oil supplies. As of late June, again, Trump caused. As of late June, SPR held just 325.7 million mic barrels, its lowest since 1983. The watchdog warned that the nation's emergency crude stockpile may not be able to meet future drawdown directives if significant upgrades are not made. Much of the SPR's infrastructure is more than four decades old. Many critical components, including pumps, pipelines, and valves installed when the reserve was built in the late 1970s and 1980s, are now operating well beyond their intended service life. Quote, investments in the SPR are again not keeping pace with the aging reserves needs, the GAO said, warning of, quote, looming operational limitations, close quote, caused by deteriorating infrastructure, maintenance backlogs, and reduced operational capacity. It also said the Department of Energy has not updated its long-term strategy for the SPR since 2016, despite major upheavals in global energy markets and repeated large-scale emergency drawdowns. Self-inflicted as well. The GAO pointed to the decade-long $1.4 billion Life Extension Phase 2 project to modernize the SPR's aging facilities, which has been plagued by delays and scope reductions. The current maintenance backlog alone would cost around $230 million to address, according to DOE estimates from December 2025. So, two, Trump has knowingly not been a good steward of what Congress has appropriated as well. And for historical context, this Epstein didn't kill himself matter is described as Trump's Iran-Contra and Trump's Watergate. This is Trump's Watergate. Today, the New York Times released a truly stunning report on Epstein cover-up by the White House. Collusion, breaking the law, evading subpoenas, it's all in there. Trump quashing the files, the VP, the COS, DOJ, FBI, and others colluding in their release and compliance. Officials lying to the public, admin infighting and exits. Officials who appeared in the front of Congress during this time. As posted by Representative Stansbury, a link to the New York Times, a discussion, a report, the convening in the Situation Room in the White House. The president's top advisors gathered in a series of Situation Room meetings as they struggled to contain a scandal engulfing Donald Trump himself. On July 17, 2025, at around 6 o'clock in the evening, President Trump's top officials filed into the White House Situation Room. The secure bunker where classified and high-stakes national security matters are discussed and decided. This was where the President Barack Obama, along with Vice President Joe Biden, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and the President's national security team watched the raid that ended up with the death of Osama bin Laden in 2011. Now, however, Trump's most senior advisors had gathered without him to figure out how to gain some measure of control over a very different kind of crisis threatening to engulf the presidency, the Epstein files. 10 days early, the Justice Department and the FBI had jointly released the memo and bluntly stated that their review had no client list of powerful men for who the notorious pedophile Jeffrey Epstein had allegedly procured underage girls and young women. I'm bringing this up because this is what was the Iran war was used to cover this story up. Did anybody forget about this? As I was reading this story, and you might get the sense too, it's looking like some sort of a documentary in writing as you read through the way this sounds. Intended to put the rest of speculation and end the pressure campaign to release the voluminous materials in the department's possession, the memo instead had the opposite effect, setting off a backlash that was notably loud among the MAGA MAGA base, and it was about to get worse. The Wall Street Journal was preparing a damaging article about Trump's relationship with Epstein. The president's desperate attempts to kill the story had failed. His team now had to get everyone onto the same page about how to counter the growing swarm of attention. They needed a gesture of transparency to appease the increasingly angry base, but also a way to convey the message that the president was sympathetic to his supporters' concerns, which itself was a problem, because he clearly wasn't. Vice President J.D. Vance took a seat at the head of the table in the John F. Kennedy conference room of the Situation Room complex. Quote, "This is a huge problem," close quote, he told the group. Arrayed around him were the White House Chief of Staff, Susie Wiles, the White House Counsel, David Warrington, the Press Secretary, Caroline Leavitt, and Deputy Chief of Staff Taylor Budwich, and Communications Director Stephen Hume, the Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanchett, and Associate Attorney General Stanley Woodward Jr., and the Deputy Chief of Staff James Blair. Attorney General Pam Bondi and FBI Director Kash Patel joined on speakerphone. The gang's all there, isn't it, folks? The vice president appeared panicked to others in the room about the way the subject of Epstein was already dividing the MAGA coalition. Some senior officials had the impression that Vance had bought into the darkest theories about Epstein and the cabal of predators hidden within the country's ruling class. Wiles would tell others that the vice president had proved himself to be a major conspiracy theorist. Another top official said later that Vance had been pounding on the Epstein issue since the release of the memo. He was privately pressing for the administration to release all the Epstein files, everything the Justice Department possession, even encouraging a congressional investigation. Vance had also floated to colleagues in an extraordinary PR gambit, but the White House enlist Tucker Carlson to interview Epstein's longtime girlfriend and co-conspirator Ghislaine Maxwell in prison. It might help the president if Maxwell was willing to state that Trump had not been part of the wrongdoing with Epstein. Vance told the group he believed that all the files should be released as soon as possible. He argued that Congress was going to force the release of the files eventually. It was already clear that bipartisan coalition in favor of such action was forming on Capitol Hill, and the momentum was going to in one direction. If the administration got out ahead of this, they released everything voluntarily, including whatever material existed about the president, it would at least get credit for transparency. The alternative was to let the story drag out for months as information dripped out, each new revelation renewing the cycle of suspicion and fury. Better to rip the bandage off and move on. Vice President J.D. Vance appeared panicked as to President Trump's other top advisors about the way the subject of Jeffrey Epstein was dividing the MAGA coalition. Even the unsubstantiated allegations and anecdotes about Trump should go out, Vance argued. They were going to surface regardless, and if the administration published them first, it would demonstrate a good faith and take the oxygen out of the conspiracy theories. His arguments fell on skeptical ears, but some advisors thought it would be a good idea to have Justice Department officials call a news conference to explain their position on the Epstein affair, going beyond the memo that precipitated the crisis. At this point in the meeting, Blair spoke up, quote, with all due respect, close quote, he said, quote, the communication strategy of this group got us here. I don't know that it's going to get us out. And if you're going to go in front of the press, you've got a lot of work to do, close quote. He began to ask pointed mock questions, demonstrating how difficult a news conference might be. As the president's former defense attorney, Blanchett, had a unique advantage point in the discussion, he was better equipped than anyone else in the room to weigh the ideas being discussed against Trump's personal and political interests. Blanchett laid out what he saw as their best options. Option one was the petition of federal court in Florida and New York to unseal the grand jury testimonies, the secret transcripts of prosecutors' presentations of witnesses and evidence in their efforts to obtain indictments in the past Epstein-related cases, as those were almost certain to contain no significant new information, agreed everyone that this option was a good idea, and not only because a release was unlikely to damage the president. Under the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, the secrecy of grand jury materials is regarded by most federal judges as almost always inviolate, and the bar for any release is exceptionally high. If the courts refuse to unseal them, as Blanchard predicted, they could shift the blame from withholding the Epstein material away from Trump administration and onto the judges. And all the better if the judges had been appointed by Democratic presidents. Blanchard's suggestion would make it appear that the White House wanted materials released when it was almost certainly not to happen. Option two was to have a Justice Department lawyers question Maxwell and publicly release transcripts, a twist on the idea proposed earlier by Vance. Blanchard offered to interview Maxwell himself. Quote, what if we got her to talk to Congress? Close quote, Vance suggested. Blanchard raised the possibility that Maxwell's lawyer might expect something in return for her candor. Warrington, the White House counsel, responded by laying out the available choices without advocating any of them. Maxwell could be given a pardon, he said, or she could have her sentence reduced. At the time, several around the table spoke of a registrar their strong disapproval. By pardoning Maxwell, a trafficker of young girls would create a huge PR problem. Huge PR, Jung said. He predicted that in the wake of the pardon, the Epstein accusers would be fanning out on TV, telling their stories and ripping the administration to shreds. Blair was also adamantly opposed to the pardon. Quote, we can't offer Ghislaine Maxwell anything, quote, close quote, he said. Quote, and I don't know why we would. If we give Ghislaine Maxwell any sort of break whatsoever, and then she turns around to say nice things about us or says nice things about us and we give her a break, it will undermine the entire point of her saying good things, that we will feed the conspiracy theory, period. If there's nothing for her to say that hurts us, we shouldn't have to offer her anything. The consensus was that calling for the release of the grand jury material was the best course of action. Wiles told the group she would discuss the matter with Trump and ask if he would send a Truth Social post calling for the release of the sealed grand jury documents. White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles and her deputy James Blair were key members of the Trump's team discussing the crisis. The communication strategy of this group got us here, Blair told the others. I don't know how it's going to get us out. In the days before publication, Trump, in the effort to quash the story, had called News Corp's chief executive Robert Thomas, News Corp's owner Rupert Murdoch, and the Journal's editor-in-chief Emma Tucker. Practically shouting, the president told Tucker, who is British, that she must hate America, and he told her he would be filing a lawsuit. But none of this bullying had worked, and now, as a group sat quietly reading the full story in the Situation Room, Wiles readied a public denial for the president, which he soon posted to social media. Shortly after this, the president posted again. He was going along with the plan his advisors had hashed out in the Situation Room, though it was clear he didn't like having to do it. Quote, based on the ridiculous amount of publicity given to Jeffrey Epstein, I have asked Attorney General Pam Bondi to produce any and all pertinent grand jury testimony subject to court approval. This scam perpetuated by the Democrats should end right now. And I'll let you read the rest. I read this part because you can see, relative to the news, it's how the news followed. This is a crisis within the Trump situation, administration, He's in some real trouble. They don't know what, didn't know what to do with it. They still don't know what to do with it. This is a very interesting report that I think opens up a lot of what's going on behind the scenes. When we hear Trump talk, it may not be him. These are strategies, again, that are given to him. This then brings up the specter of Iran and what that was about and who are they covering and Satan Yehu. Why is Epstein such a big deal and a problem? And this has been my main problem. It's not just that there's got victims. What's the compromise that the government now suffers? We the people now suffer? That we're now hearing Israel is being proposed to be part of the military or have a substantial access to our technology and access to manufacturing. That we're now hearing American service people will be put in their service to do whatever the bidding of the bloodthirsty Zionist political movement might be. And this, again, this report goes on and on. It's like watching a television documentary as I was reading it through. If you put pictures in your mind about it, it's very interesting. The thing about it is it's exposing an insight into the Trump administration that shows he's not necessarily in control. And that's not very, I don't know what to say about more of the truth of that. What do you say? What are we going to do as a people relative to what he's doing as a president? As we also hear, he's just seemingly taking this to profit for others and for himself. Again, America is not being made great again. It's actually suffering way worse and more detrimentally, I think, in particular watching what's going on with the Israel integration in the United States and the control that AIPAC has and things like that, all the organizations around that we don't hear about. We're not spectators. You're not a non-spectator to that. This has been BTW RLM 675, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs or Nature Willin'.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum line. In house court, no place to hide. A can of wood bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.